Now, on Monday, which is Valentine's Day, of course, it will be 41 years since the Stardust tragedy. The families of the 48 young people who never came home are still waiting for confirmation of when the inquest into their deaths will get underway. One of the victims was 21-year-old Brian Hobbs, and I spoke to his only surviving sibling, Pat Dunn, just before we came on air. She's never spoken publicly before, and I began by asking her why she had decided to break her silence today.
I think during the years between Brian dying and now, I lost, I'm one of seven siblings and mum and dad, and I lost all of them slowly all during that. So I kind of, in a sense, went into the mode of looking after them and kind of grieving, you know, all of that. I think in the past couple of years and the past year mostly, I've become very frustrated with the length of time it is. And I felt the need to kind of say something. I needed to talk and needed to say something and needed to remind everyone about him and about them all. Because I felt that the years were going by and all of the tragedies that happened and different ones in the past while, the past couple of weeks and past couple of months, that the minister could say, no stone unturned. And I'm sitting watching the telly going, there's 4,800 Boulder somewhere, minister. What's happening here?
I know you were very close to Brian, yes. Even though there was a big age gap between
yes.
you.
That bond was always there. I was classed as the big sister. And I suppose my mum was orphanage reared, so she'd no brothers and sisters. So I was kind of like the second mum to them all.
Bring us back then to that night, Valentine's night, 1981. Your parents were actually on the premises as
yes,
well.
Yes, absolutely. Like, we didn't know Brian was going to go to the Stardust, and we were more delighted what was happening for Dad. He was being presented with a long service medal that night and a bit of a dinner and all that kind of stuff. I think around a certain stage, there was a smell of smoke in the room they were in. So they started to clear out the lantern room. And then Mum and Dad didn't see anything of what happened and didn't know Brian was there. So they came home, fine, went to bed, and that was it. And that was, when Mum thought about that afterwards, you know, that Brian was maybe there, was there, of course, and what was happening and whatever it may be, it was sad. It was very hard and sad. Yeah,
because of course he was working in Saks club or hotel rather in Donnybrook at the time. So that's where you thought Brian was.
Absolutely, because he wanted to go to the dance because friends of his were taking part in it. And he wanted to go. And the boss said at the time, no, it's Valentine's night. We're busy, because he was in the catering industry. So I think about 11:15, 12:15, they relented. And Brian hopped in a cab and was there for the competition. So none of us knew he was there.
And then when did you start to worry?
The next day, I rang Mam every morning, you know, chit-chat, how was things, how was Dad, how'd you get on, all that kind of stuff. And I said, did Brian come home? And she said, no. So she said, no, he's probably with Gerard having the late nighter. That was it. So I kind of was watching or listening to the radio all during the day and just felt niggly. And I rang Peter, my brother, he was in work. And I rang Peter and said, where's Brian Hobbs? And he said, he's not at home. And I said, no. He said, will he be in Gerard's? And I said, I checked. So he said, leave it with me. So he rang around to a few friends and got back to me and goes, no. So I rang Mam then later and said, any sign of Brian? Sleeping it off, she said, in Gerard's, I'd say. So we chit-chatted again. We talked about what was unfolding on the news because she was looking at it naturally and listening to it. And I said, oh, right. But then panic then settled in with Peter and I. So Peter rang my sister Anne and her husband Victor and himself and the two of them. They went to all the hospitals. Now, you literally had to go down corridors and look at people on trolleys and sitting there with burns and all. You had to go looking yourself because it was chaotic. Hospitals were mad. I mean, 48 died, 218 were injured. And then at some stage in one hospital then they said to him, I think you should go to the morgue. He rang me and said, we're going to the morgue. And I said, you didn't find him. And he goes, no, we have to go to the morgue. So they went to the morgue and there was a queue outside. And they went in by degrees because you couldn't have too many in. And there was rows kind of black bags with numbers on them, with parts of people, not parts of people, people. And they had to go up and down each row.
And how did they know that Brian was there then?
Brian had been, as I said, in Zurich and he was 21 in the November. And they got a lovely leather belt made for him with the buckle B. And it was his pride and joy. It was lovely, pure leather. And on one of the bundles was the belt and a piece of the leather of the buckle and a piece of shoe and a piece of jumper. And they walked up and down it a few times. And then the young guard came over to them and said to Peter, do you see anything you recognise? And Peter goes, no, I can't see Brian. So he said, you may not be looking for Brian. I see you're stopping here every so often. And he said, well, that's his things. So we said, I think you should settle for what's there. And Peter goes, no, I can't see him. So we said, well, that's the way they're all, everyone's laid out. And he said, across the top here, he said, we have unidentified and nothing, just piles of stuff. This was the six that were never identified. So Peter talked to Anne and talked to Victor, and what was there was his shoe and the belt, which was kind of significant, and a piece of jumper we knew he wore with the shoes. He was a snazzy dresser. Things match, lovely wine slip on shoes and a jumper. And they settled on that. So they had to sign forms and then step out.
And then, of course, you had the ordeal of telling your parents, yes, in the mm-hmm. middle of mm-hmm. of that terrible yeah. time, all that grief. Yes. Mm-hmm. You had the Taoiseach at the time, Charlie Hoy, coming to the house.
Gosh, yeah. I answered the door and all the newspapers were outside, and he turned round and did a photo shoot kind of, and Dad was Fianna Fáil at the time, shook his hand, thrilled to bits that Mr. Hoy called to see us. Mam kind of didn't think too much, but anyhow.
And of course promised to do anything he could.
Absolutely. On his way out, he said, we will do anything we can and everything we can. My Minister for Environment is Mr. Burke, and he will be calling to you maybe at some stage. And yes, and it was probably, although the term wasn't out then, no stone unturned, but it was probably the same kind of thing. And he left. And I just said, we don't need him.
Your parents ultimately went to their graves without ever really knowing absolutely. What happened to
absolutely.
Brian.
Absolutely, yeah. This is in a sense why I kind of want to know. That sounds awful. I'm the last Hobbs standing as such at 75. So I need to know for the rest of them that fought for this in the beginning, and I need to know what happened to him. I need accountability. I need to know exactly how it happened and read a post-mortem. And I need justice. I know closure is a word that everyone uses, but you'll never have it. You'll never get it. But I just need to stand there and say, this is what happened.
You're as close probably as you've ever been to that day now. Yes. And you know, just bring us right up to date. There are a new inquest yes. into the deaths of Brian and the 47. This was ordered in 2019.
Yes.
Now, it still hasn't got underway because of a number of obstacles.
Oh, yeah.
And just one of those was the payment of jurors.
Yes. Well, just if I may tip into one that affected me, when free legal aid come up, and the criteria for free legal aid was paying a mortgage and all that kind of stuff. Now, at 74, we'd our house paid for. So I didn't come into the criteria. I think there was 12 or 13 of us was. And I kind of thought, hold on, I'm not begging for this. And it kind of divided the group. And that kind of was desperately hard. And we were pushing the minister. You know, our team are brilliant now. I love the coroner. She's just brilliant. And our team are fantastic, Phoenix Law. And they pushed those letters going backwards and forwards from a humane point of view. Please give these free legal aid. Now, it took months, and that was a block. And then now with the jurors, there was lots of things. Like in the beginning when we knew we were having the inquest, we were all going, delighted. Got the venue, delighted. But there's been so many blocks all during the past year of correspondence not being passed around properly. And this term, privilege and privacy, have been used by some of the other teams in giving stuff, whatever. And it's been so, so frustrating, all of this. The whole jury thing now is ridiculous.
And just explain that to people.
Seemingly, with an inquest, juries are not paid. It's some particular law, and it's something that can just be signed in quite easy by the said minister. But this is kind of dragging its feet again, like the legal aid. And it's just a matter of signing it in to say people be paid if they take time.
Because, of course, this is expected to be the longest running inquest in the history of the state.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
And would be a big ask for people to give up all their time. Because if you were yes. in a jury for a criminal case, for instance, your
absolutely,
salary would be
yes.
paid.
I can't comprehend this block again. Like sometimes I think there's been particular blocks for particular reasons. And some of the blocks during the time I'm going, that's petty. Why do that? Because especially, as I say, there's no stone unturned from the said minister. And I'm going, please, like they were 48 young people with dreams and hopes and were going places. They had lives planned. They're being disregarded. They were children. They were brothers. They were sisters. You know, they're important. They all were going places and had lives ahead of them.
What are you hoping for from this inquest?
I'm hoping mostly for accountability. For, I don't know whether it's going to be one person or a few people or a body of people will say, it's our fault. I need someone to give accountability for this. I then need justice. I don't know what form of justice I need, but I need justice. Like, I've never read a Pope Biden's postmortem. I'm getting it. I will read it. Not maybe instantly, read it at some stage. I believe it's quite gruesome. The solicitor said they will have someone with us when we read them. I just need to know how. No, as awful as it may be, how?
And you need to have those answers soon.
Yes. Yes, of course. It is hard. And like, Valentine's brings it back up again. And, you know, while younger people are doing Valentine's flowers and the whole lot, no, Valentine's means nothing to me at all. It's just another day that they're gone.
And of course, we are hugely grateful to Pat Dunn for coming in and telling us her story today. Heartbreaking as it is. That issue about the payment of jurors for this inquest, Mairead Farrell, your colleague Lynn Boylan has introduced a motion or a bill. In relation to that?
Look, first of all, obviously it's absolutely devastating for everyone who was just listening to Pat, and indeed we're thinking of all the Hobbs family and all the families. So my colleague Lynn Boylan has long been campaigning with the Stardust families in relation to this, and this issue, you know, as Pat said, there is something that, you know, can be fixed and should be fixed. So Lynn introduced a bill yesterday that will allow for the inquests to have the jurors, just like in a court case, which is obviously different than for inquests. But that is something that needs to be done. These families have waited far too long. Too many families have lost other loved ones without having that accountability and that truth.
Yeah, I was
talking to Antoinette Keegan, who's obviously, you know, played a huge part over many, many years fighting. And it's just incredible that it is, you know, 41 years on, and far from no stone being unturned. Every obstacle has been put in the way of the families of those young people who died in that fire from actually getting the truth and justice they deserved. You know, the travesty of the Keane report, which essentially tried to blame the young people themselves, and every single step of the way. And the only reason we're here is because the families have fought against all the odds and against the indifference, essentially, of governments over many years, and still they are facing obstacles. It's absolutely shocking. All is needed is a small amendment in the law, which would allow the jurors to be paid, because they could be potentially working in this inquest for 4-6 months or more, and that the minister should just do that. It shouldn't be necessary for the opposition to have put forward bills. But also there's an issue of the selection of the jury. And Antoinette tells me that they are saying they want a selection process where the guards are not involved in the selection of the
I'm just the watching jury. The clock, and I just want to put the issue about the payment of jurors to the minister before we have to come off. Minister, surely that can be sorted.
Yeah, my understanding is that the Minister for Justice received a letter from the legal firm representing most of the Stardust victims' families regarding jury selection and payments of jurors, and I assume she's given it her best consideration. The law that this refers to, it's the Coroner's Act since 1962, and there is no statutory authority under this law to prescribe fees or expenses to jurors, and I think that's where the issue is. But I do know there has been some positives in relation to the pillar room in the Rotunda Hospital has been secured as the new venue, and that Dr. Moira Cullinan, that she's after holding 11 meetings to date.
Sorry to cut across you, I'm just literally almost out of time, but you can't give us any commitment that there's going to be some movement on that issue on the jurors?
No, I don't have that information, but I do know that the Minister for Justice received a letter from the legal firm, and I'm sure it's being given every consideration.
It's a simple amendment to the Coroner's Bill that's needed. That's
okay.
It.
Okay, we're going to unfortunately have to leave that there.